Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Latin American Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Candela Marini, your host, and today we'll be talking to Natalia Milanesio about her book Destape, Sex, Democracy, and Freedom in Post-Dictatorial Argentina, published by University of Pittsburgh Press this past year, 2019. Welcome, Natalia Milanesio, and thank you so much for accepting our invitation and being here with us today.
Thank you, Candela. It's a pleasure to be here and talk about the book.
So you're an associate professor in the history department at the University of Houston.
Yes, and that's correct.
Your first book was studied consumer culture in mid-20th century Argentina. I wonder if you could begin the interview by telling us a bit about yourself, where you were born and studied, but also how your previous research led you to your current book.
Yes, like you said, I'm currently working at the University of Houston. I've been here since 2009, and I've been teaching modern Latin American history. I was born and raised in Rosario, Argentina's third largest city. I did my licenciatura at the National University of Rosario. The licenciatura in Argentina is the equivalent of a master's degree, more or less, here in the States, because it requires the writing of a thesis with original substantial research in the archives, in the case of historians. So I completed my licenciatura at the National University of Rosario and then moved to the States in 2000 to do my master's in history at New York University, and then I did my PhD in history at Indiana University. I finished in 2009, and like I said, I moved to Houston, and I've been working at the University of Houston since 2009. My Destape is my third book. Second research project. My first book was Workers Go Shopping in Argentina. It's a social and cultural history of consumption in the 40s and 50s during Juan Domingo Perón's government in Argentina. Basically, very briefly, Perón changed profoundly a society in Argentina by recognizing very important rights for workers. And one of the most important changes in this time period, was the increase in wages for workers. So with more money in their pockets, workers, working class families start spending more on items they had never enjoyed before. So the book, my first book, is about that new world of popular consumer culture that emerged in the 40s and 50s in the context of Peronism. The book, Workers Go Shopping in Argentina, was published here in the States in 2013 and I revised it for an Argentine reader, for an Argentine audience, and was published in Argentina in 2014. So Destape, like I said, is my third book, but actually my second research project. Destape is the time period and the topic is completely different from Workers Go Shopping, no? Destape is a history of sexuality in the 1980s in Argentina, and Workers Go Shopping was about consumption in the 40s and 50s. Hmm. They're both cultural histories, though, and the approach in this book, as we have this conversation, hopefully will become apparent, know that the methods and the theories and the approach respond to a cultural history. When I was, let me just very briefly explain what Destape is before telling you why I decided to study the Destape. The Destape was the most explosive sociocultural phenomenon in Argentina after the fall of the military dictatorship. The last military dictatorship in Argentina emerged after a coup d'etat in 1976 and lasted from 1976 to 1983. This was a very repressive, very violent dictatorship at different levels, but also with regard to sexuality. So when the dictatorship fell in 1983, the Destape happened. And destapar in Spanish means to take the lid off, to uncover, to undress, to expose. So basically, the Destape was this, no? The uncovering of sexual images and sexual narratives that had been silenced and repressed during the dictatorship. So I was growing up in Argentina, I was a preteen in Argentina at the moment of the return of democracy in the country. So basically, I have very clear recollections. I was still very young, and I did not have access to this content. But this was so pervasive that I clearly remember, you know, this avalanche of sexual images and text, you know, everywhere, on television, radio, magazines, films. So when I grew up and I became quite interested in the Destape as a cultural phenomenon, and I began collecting magazines, films, images from that time period. But this I did it just because I was interested in the topic. And at the time, when I was in the moment, basically, in which I was conceptualizing and thinking about a second book, I decided that I wanted to continue exploring Peronism in the 40s and 50s, and I was conceptualizing a project about gender and politics in connection mm-hmm. to Peronism in Argentina. And at that time, for some reason, I decided to start reading. I wanted to read about the Destape beyond, you know, my passion for collecting Destape stuff, no? And when I decided to start informally researching about the Destape, I realized there was nothing written. So basically, I couldn't find any works, any books about the Destape in Argentina. So At that moment, I saw an opportunity as a historian to fill that gap in the literature, and at the same time, indulging my interest in the topic. For me, that in a way created a dilemma, because I had already begun with the second project on Peronism. And also because for me, the 1980s was completely unknown territory. I was not familiar with the archives. I was not familiar with the primary sources. I had no experience with this time period. But then I realized that I felt that I needed to do what I wanted to do, that this was a topic and a theme that I was very passionate about, and I decided to
follow your intuition.
Yes. And I decided to basically to step out of my comfort zone. And I think it was challenging to start a project with no knowledge of the archives or no knowledge of the period, but it was also it was a fun project. I learned a lot, and also I think the project gave me the opportunity to really fill a gap, in the literature. So that is the road, in a way, that led me to write about sexuality and the Destape in the 1980s.
And also, doing more recent history, you had the opportunity to work with other kinds of testimonies, right, and resources, and actually interview and talk to the people that were the protagonists of this history.
Yes,
right.
Yes. And actually, this is interesting because I did oral history for my first book. I interview in the early 2000s. I interview very old people, Argentines who were young in the 40s and 50s. So basically, one of the chapters in the first book is completely based on oral histories. So I had that experience, and I brought that with me for the Destape. Of course, the types of subjects that I interview for the Destape are different, but this is one of the, I guess this is one of the continuations between the two books, the use of oral sources for the book. However, in both cases, speaking about the Destape, what I think is interesting about the Destape is a social and cultural history. And I think one of the most interesting aspects of the project was the possibility to include a very large number of voices and historical actors. So because of the organization of the book, the book discusses the Destape as a media phenomenon, but also as a phenomenon that happened at the level of social practices, at the level of social experience. That gave me the opportunity to include different voices and different social sectors. So just to name a few, movie directors, writers, sex therapist, journalist, activist, feminist, readers, the Catholic Church and Catholic organizations that were the strongest opponents to the Destape. And the book is based on a very diverse body of sources, the oral interviews that I was just mentioning with feminists, with sexologists, with journalists, with sex educators, but also magazine collections, films, television shows, sexology books and journals, surveys, statistics. I also work with the internal documents of gay, lesbian, and feminist organizations. And like I mentioned earlier, with documents as newsletters authored by Catholic organizations and the Argentine Catholic Church.
Yeah, actually, let's start with the book and how it's organized. You actually start with a poem by Spanish sociologist Josep Vicent Márquez, and the poem is from 1975. Would you like to read it to us?
Yes, thank you for the invitation. It's a wonderful poem. And the title of the poem is Una Utopía Razonable, Reasonable Utopia. And like you said, Candela was authored by José Vicente Márquez. Márquez was a Spanish sociologist who specialized in sexuality, and he was a very important figure in the redefinition of modern sexology in Spain after the fall of Francisco Franco's dictatorship in the mid-1970s. So the word destape, the word destape that Argentines take in order to name this sexualization of culture and society in the early 1980s, was first the word that Spaniards use for their own destape in Spain when Franco's, after the end of Franco's dictatorship. So let me read the poem, and then I'll tell you why this poem is important for my research and how I discovered it.
Great.
Eroticize life. Separate coitus from genital pleasure. Reveal coitus as coupling. Air out the sex tuck in the genitals. Yet honor your genitals as an accepted part of your accepted body. Play down sexual matters without trivializing them. Learn to play and learn the importance of playing. Make love whenever at least two people want to. Don't make love when you really want to do something else. Always do it with, never against. Separate sex from procreation, but also from macho bravado and from resignation, from aggressiveness, competition, and revenge. Know sexual techniques, but then forget them, like you forget a book you've studied well. Don't make masturbation a substitute for interaction. Don't make interaction a substitute for masturbation. Blow out age, the time usurped by the patriarch. Make room in bed for humor and tenderness. Try making love to get to know someone, but also try getting to know someone to make love. Forget the inhibitions and the records forever. Don't be indifferent to whether or not you get laid, but don't agonize over it. Invent a new language for speaking plainly about this as you go, without interjecting bluster or mockery. So this
is
a very beautiful, very, very profound, very substantial poem. And I found this while doing research in the personal archives of a sexologist, an Argentine sexologist of the name Mirta Granero. She was a very important figure in Rosario and nationally in Argentina, one of the founders of the one of the first non-governmental organizations dealing with sex education and family planning in Argentina. And one of the founders of the first Institute for the Study of Sexology and Sexology Clinic outside of Buenos Aires. I interview Mirta Granero, and she very generously allowed me to work in her professional archive. And while working with her materials, I found this poem in one of her boxes. And so I asked her, what is this poem? And she explained to me that in this time period, the 1980s was the moment of the consolidation, actually the rise and consolidation of sexology, and the boom of sex therapy and sexual workshops. So sexologists and sex therapists used this poem to start discussions in these workshops and with these individuals, no, and the patients in sex therapy. I realized later, at that moment when she explained to me the importance of the poem and the uses and how they utilize it in these workshops, I didn't understand how important this was. And then later, while I was back at home and while I was started writing the book, I realized that this poem encapsulated the most important characteristics of the destape. The importance of freedom, the importance of pleasure, the importance of identity in connection to sexuality. And this is the reason why the book opens with this beautiful poem, because I think it really exemplifies the richness of the changes that took place with the return to democracy in Argentina.
And so what was the destape, and what was it reacting against? What was there before? What was new about it?
Yes, the destape was this explosive sexualization of culture and society, in the 1980s. And I think it's one of the most evident, profound cultural and social transformations in this transition to democracy. Like I said earlier, Argentina experienced the last military dictatorship from 1976 to 1983. And this was one of the bloodiest dictatorships in the region. And the violence and the repression that pervaded all aspects of society also pervaded sexual culture in the 1970s. So sexual culture during the dictatorship in Argentina was very repressive, was very prudish, and very conservative. And just to give you a few examples of this general characterization, let me mention that the dictatorship prohibited family planning in public hospitals. They eliminated reproduction clinics and reproductive health clinics in public hospitals. The dictatorship prescribed sex education in schools. They persecuted and incarcerated gay people. In addition to that, sex education and erotic books were prohibited. Magazines were banned for including nude images. and filmmakers and film producers were forced to cut sex scenes and avoid themes like themes that were considered quote unquote dangerous by the dictatorship, like adultery and abortion. So with the return to democracy in 1983, Argentines experienced an unprecedented sexualization of culture that they call destape. The destape began or gained momentum in 83 and lasted more or less until 87, 88, continue until the end of the decade, but by the early 1990s, the scandal and the novelty that had characterized the first years of the destape wore off. So what happened with the destape is basically there are two layers to the destape. The destape was a large scale media phenomenon, right? So what we see is that nudity and sex colonize all types of publications. Soft porn movies topped the list of the 10 highest grossing films each year. Erotic novels and sexology books became bestsellers, and erotic content inundated television shows. So that is the layer of the large-scale media phenomenon. But what the book shows, and this is, like they said, the first history of the destape, what the book shows is that in addition to being this large-scale media phenomenon, the destape was a profound transformation in sexual ideologies and practices. And these practices and these ideologies included the boom of sex therapy and sexology, the fight for the introduction of sex education at schools, the expansion of family planning services, and the centrality of discussions on sexuality in the feminist and gay movements. So basically here, just to put it in other words, Argentines call the destape the mass media phenomenon, no, the sexual content in the media. What I propose is to reconceptualize that idea. Yes, of course, the destape happened at that level, but also included a profound process of individual and collective sexual discovery, and also included a fight against sexism, homophobia, and sexual injustice. So there was a destape in films, in literature, television, theater, but there was also a women's destape, a destape of feminist, gay, and lesbian activists, and a destape led by sexologists, sex educators, and sexual health experts. In a way, yes, sorry.
No, yes, you in your book you highlight that it wasn't a homogeneous movement, right? And it had different images and discourses and going in different directions and actually with different messages. Could you maybe tell us a little bit of what you found and what these different messages were, especially in relation to democracy, right?
Yes. I think that one of the most interesting aspects of the book is how it demonstrates that beyond paradigmatic democratic practices like elections or the restoration of political rights, Argentines experience and resignify democracy through new ideas about sex and changes in sexuality and sexual culture. Just to give you a few examples, sending letters to the editors for sex columns, submitting erotic stories to magazines for publication, buying erotic magazines, attending sex therapy sessions, denouncing sexual violence against women, organizing for the right to abortion, protesting police repression against gay people. All these are examples of how different groups of Argentines link sexuality and sexual culture with very concrete democratic values like participation, activism, and self-expression. So in a way, sex and sexuality as discourse and practice was a sphere in which democracy for Argentines in the 1980s was experienced as powerfully as in the practice of voting. Now, that for Argentines, the recuperation of the right to vote, the recuperation of political rights, was only part of the recuperation of the democratic system, but the democracy understood as a living practice was profoundly connected with these ideas about sexuality and practices connected to sexuality and sexual culture more generally.
Affirming your sexuality was or your sexual identity and your wishes and choices was a way of affirming yourself as an individual, right? With choices within a democratic society.
Absolutely. Right. Yes. And this is why the idea, in the case of the feminist and the sexual minorities, the word destape really conveys, the term really conveys, not this. Uncovering of these identities that had been silenced and repressed, no, in the previous period during the dictatorship. I think the destape of the feminists, the destape of the sexual minorities is about, you know, finding this voice and taking, you know, the public sphere in order to fight for women's and sexual minority rights.
So we could talk of the destapes in plural almost, right? Instead, not just of one movement. And throughout your book, you also notice that there's an incredible thirst for information about all these topics, and not just among young people, but also among the adult population. And as you were mentioning before, this is reflected in the expansion and commercial success of sexology. And you describe it, this sexology boom, as both a cause and an effect of the destape. Could you expand on this?
Yes. There was a very profound symbiotic relationship between sexology as a discipline and the destape as a medium phenomenon. And this is in connection to the presence in the media of sexologists for the very first time in the history of the country. So what we see in this time period is sex therapists, sex experts, sexologists in general, occupying very important spaces in television, the radio, publishing books and sexology manuals that became bestsellers in the period like never before. So what happened here is that the destape as a media phenomenon was partly fueled by the discourses, the images produced by these sexologists, right? And they became a very important actor in, like I said, in all these different cultural expressions. On the other hand, these spaces in the media allow the sexologists to become very well-known public figures, to become respected specialists, to become authoritative voices with regard to these topics. So this is what I mean, by the symbiotic relation. In a way, the sexology played a very important role in liberating Argentines to talk more freely about sexuality and sexual problems. But the platform, or the most important platform and the first platform that sexologists used, was the media. So this is what you mentioned, about the relation between the Destape and sexology as a discipline.
And then parallel to this boom of sexology, you also studied like the different initiatives that fought to redesign the way Argentine society and the government thought of family planning and sex education, which in previous decades was directly linked both by democratic and dictatorial governments with certain, let's say, civic duties related to demographic growth and national morality. How these organizations devoted to sexual health challenged these ideas? What was their approach?
Yes, and this is connected to the richness now of the Destape as a social and cultural phenomenon. Like I said at the beginning, the Destape was a media phenomenon. So the first two chapters I devoted to that. The first two chapters of the book. The third chapter, chapter number three, discusses sexology and traces what we just discussed, traces the institutional, social, and cultural the cultural consolidation of the discipline. But for sexologists, sex was all about pleasure. And basically they promoted the idea they had them promoted was the idea of sexual literacy. They claimed that in the 1970s, because of the silence, because of the repression and the censorship of the dictatorship, Argentines were completely illiterate when it came to sexual matters. So At the center of this idea of sexual literacy was the legitimization of the search for pleasure as the main goal of sexuality. And now we take that for granted. I mean, when we discuss sexuality as a topic, pleasure is one of the most important ideas that we connect to. But this was a novelty in the 1980s. Because during the dictatorship, throughout the 1970s, sexuality, the emphasis, the public emphasis on sexuality was on responsibility, social and personal responsibility connected to reproduction. And this was not only an idea promoted by the military dictatorship, was also an idea promoted by the revolutionary left. For the dictatorship, couples had to produce citizens for the nation, no? And for the revolutionary left, couples had to produce fighters for the revolution. But in both cases, in spite of the profound ideological differences between the dictatorship and the revolutionary left, both link sexuality to reproduction. So this is one of the main innovations coming from the sexology discourses. And sexuality is about pleasure, and it's finding a personal path to search for that pleasure that was connected to an individual's well-being. But that was only part of the story of the Destape. And like you were saying, you know, the other side of the story were those specialists that were not centered, were not focused on pleasure necessarily, but were centered on redefining reproduction and redefining reproduction away from the values of the 1970s dictatorship. So if chapter three is about sexology and the search for pleasure, chapter four moves the discussion into basically beginning by explaining the repression of sexual and reproductive health care in the 70s, right? And during the dictatorship, sex education was suppressed in schools, and all activities related to family planning were prohibited by law. So they completely, almost completely disappear from public hospitals. The military believed that a school-based sex education and family planning were threats to demographic growth, were threats to morality, and were a challenge to the rights of parents. So this chapter four follows the rise with the return to democracy of non-governmental organizations devoted to health, to sexual health and sex education. And one of the most interesting aspects that I found while studying these organizations is that after 1983, these advocates and these experts conceptualized family planning and sex education as human rights. And they maintain that family planning and sex education were legitimate means to achieve social well-being and personal fulfillment. And this was a substantial change in their discourse. Because earlier, in the context of the repression and the censorship of the dictatorship, when they had the opportunity to defend family planning and when they had the opportunity to defend sex education, they did it by arguing that these were the means to fight abortion. And so these were remedies against abortion, because these were the discourses that they could use in this very repressive context. So in the 1980s, the paradigm changed completely. And now the language changes and both family planning and sex education becomes human rights. And not only that, they proposed both as major factors for the construction and the consolidation of the new democracy. So the idea of protecting public health, the idea of strengthening the economy of the country, the idea of strengthening the processes of national modernization were intrinsically linked to reproductive health and sex education.
And then in the last chapter, you focus more on sexual minorities, a group that, as you were mentioning before, even in this atmosphere of openness that was at the Destape, remained largely silenced or misrepresented. But you argued that the activism of feminist, gay, and lesbian organizations was actually key in the resurrection of this civil society. And they were proposing a redefinition of ideas of citizenships and rights and notions of inclusiveness within this new democracy. In what ways? What were some of these groups' contributions?
Yeah, the most obvious one is this idea of exposing themselves. No, because again, if we consider the context of repression and persecution, no, in the previous period, feminist and sexual minorities spent all these years silenced, persecuted, and repressed by the dictatorship. So what happens with the return to democracy is that these groups, these social sectors materialized for the rest of Argentines. No, this is the reason why they became these very important actors in resurrecting the public sphere. And they became visible, they became active, they became public. They had existed before, but this is the moment in which we see the explosion in the public sphere of these sectors occupying these spaces, in marches, in demonstrations, in the media. And this is a very important phenomenon because, again, these groups have been silenced throughout the authoritarian regime. The other important contribution that is more profound and is more relevant is the use of a language of sexual rights to articulate their agendas. So while sexologists talk about pleasure, while family planning experts and sex educators talk about reproductive health, feminists and sexual minorities took these elements, put them together, added this idea of sexual freedom, and created a way more complex and holistic agenda that specifically utilized the language of sexual rights. So with this language of sexual rights, these social sectors articulated the defense of non-heterosexual identities, the fight for sexual and reproductive self-determination, the protection of sexual freedom. They denounce sexual violence against women. They denounce police repression and persecution of sexual minorities. They produce a critique of motherhood, and they produce a critique of heterosexuality and machismo. And what is interesting about these groups is that in a moment in which Argentines were passionately celebrating the return to democracy, these social sectors drew attention to the limits of that democracy. In a way, these activists redefine the idea of citizenship and denounce how limited the Argentine democracy was. Here is the idea was this. Yes, we recuperated our political rights, but a real democracy respects sexual rights. And for women and for sexual minorities, those sexual rights are not being recognized. So in order to live in a true democracy, the women and sexual minority need to have those rights recognized. And I think this was one of the most powerful criticisms of democracy. And again, it is connected to different social problems from sexual violence against women to the police persecution of sexual minorities that was present during the dictatorship, but sadly continue into the 1980s after the return to democracy.
And in general, who were the main opponents to this expansion of rights, and what were the main obstacles to all these improvements?
Yeah, I think there were different conservative sectors that opposed the Destape at the different levels. The government, the president at that time was Raúl Alfonsín. Raúl Alfonsín was the president elected to reopen Argentina democratically after the fall of the dictatorship. Now, his government, even though in theory, in some cases, embraced some of these goals and ideas of these social sectors, at the end of the day, did not do much in order to create concrete change in practice. So institutionally, for example, if we go to the case of sex education in schools, the government never, during this time period, the government never passed a law in order to implement sex education in schools. The federal government did almost nothing in order to establish family planning clinics in public hospitals. When this happened at the local level, at the level of the municipalities or the states, no, the provincial level, as we call provincias the states, no, in Argentina. So the argument that I want to make is that the changes that were produced because of the mobilization of society rather than as a top-down approach coming from the government. That does not mean that the government opposed these changes, but the argument is that the government did not have an active role, no, in producing these changes. I think that the main opponent, the most important opposition, came from the Catholic Church and Catholic organizations that became, as the sexologists, the family planning experts, the feminists, the sexual minorities became more and more active, these Catholic sectors also became very active in opposing the Destape at the different levels, fighting against sexual content in the media, fighting against sex education, organizing demonstrations against the implementation of reproductive health clinics in hospitals, organizing against the dissemination of sexual information in the media, organizing against abortion. So the Catholic Church, and not only the Catholic Church as the institution, but Catholic sectors, because I want to emphasize this. Yes, the Catholic Church institutionally was a very important opposing force. But what we see in this time period is the organization of Catholics in local institutions in order to fight this Destape, with a language that revolved around the family, morality, the protection of children. But at the end of the day, it was fighting against the sexual freedoms and the sexual liberties that the other social sectors were fighting for.
Right. And you also mentioned instances of terrorist attacks against some of these groups too.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. The attacks came from right-wing sectors more than ultra-Catholic sectors. The ultra-Catholic sectors organized marches, lobby with the government. But you also have instances of attacks, for example, were very common in the 83, 84, 85, you know, the first years in the return to democracy, against theaters and movie theaters. So this created, in a way, this was a continuation of the climate of fear that was prevalent during the dictatorship. Now, in a way, of course, this was a problem, not for the audiences, this was a problem for the owners of the theaters and the movie theaters, and it was a problem for the filmmakers and the theater directors. But what is interesting is, even though these attacks happened, the audiences continue, because of this appetite, not for this content, continue going to the movies, continue going to the theaters and making erotic movies or erotic plays
successful.
Very successful, yes, yes.
And so now we're in 2020, four decades later. What do you see? Have things improved? They're the same? What do you think?
Yes, I think that what is interesting, I think, in Argentina is that we still live in a very sexualized culture that, of course, is not something that only characterizes Argentina. No, this is a global phenomenon. In a way, what is interesting about Argentina is that there is a continuation of the most important components of the Destape that we can trace in a way from the 1980s to the present date. I think that what is interesting for me is to be able, if we can trace back the sexualization of culture to the 1980s, what is most interesting to me is that we also can trace back the fight for sexual freedoms to the 1980s and the context of the Destape. So the fight of Argentine women for the right to abortion right now in Argentina, the fight of women against sexual violence against women and against femicide, in Argentina, that it was so important and so prevalent today, the roots of that fight are very visible in the fight of sexual minorities and women in the 1980s, in that Destape, the Destape of feminists and the Destape of sexual minorities, that language of sexual rights that now we use very commonly is a language that was developed in that feminist Destape and that gay and lesbian Destape in the 1980s. So I guess that for me, and this is something that I briefly discuss in the epilogue of the book, I think it's important to recognize those historical pioneers, and it's important to recognize the historical roots of these progressive social movements that are so important for the sexual rights of women and sexual minorities in Argentina today.
Yes, as I was telling you before, just before starting the interview, there were many of these names and organizations I had no idea of. Their work was incredible. Well, Natalia, we're taking a lot of your time. Before wrapping up, could I ask you what you're working on now?
Yes, actually, in connection to what I just mentioned, my next research project, what I consider in, is a cultural and social history of femicide in Argentina. No, so the gender motivated killing of women, and the idea was actually born when I was conducting research for Destape, no? And at the very same time, I was also inspired, no, by the mobilization of Argentine women in the Ni Una Menos movement, no, the Not One More movement that rallies against the abuse and murder of women. So I think that current understandings of femicide portrayed it as a new social problem. No, but I believe that on the contrary, femicide has a long social and legal history. So the idea is to try to reconstruct, no, that history in the 20th century. Again, I think that is in part I'm influenced by this recuperation of historical roots, no? And I think that right now the Argentine media, since the beginning of this of the phenomenon of the Ni Una Menos, has emphasized, no, that violence against women and the killing of women is something new, like something that started happening 10 years ago or 5 years ago. Right. And that is not the case. You know, the violence against women and the gender motivated killing of women has a long history. So my idea is to write a cultural history that will show the changing representations of femicide and the victims in the media over time, but also the silences and the omissions in quote-unquote official histories, no? So basically, those are some of the ideas that I'm considering right now.
It sounds really interesting, and I'm looking forward to reading your work again then.
Thank you.
Once again, thank you for speaking with us today. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure, Candela. Thank you very much for the invitation.